Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. Continuing Discovery's coverage. We are up to, I believe it's episode 11. Let me check. It is episode 11 of season one. First aired the 14th of January, 2018. It was directed by TJ Scott. I feel there was a writer credit. I didn't write it down, and now it's not on the internet, apparently. So I don't know if that means it's a pseudonym, but it's called The Wolf Inside. In this episode, still stranded in the mirror universe, Burnham must try to save the lives of a group of rebels whom she is ordered to destroy by the Terran Empire while maintaining her cover as her counterpart. Meanwhile, a growing terror within Lieutenant Tyler consumes him and threatens the chance of the Discovery returning home. We're joined by Clay, as always. Clay, welcome back to Discovery. Welcome back to the Mirror Universe. Welcome back to the Days of Our Lives.
Thank you. I think this episode is a waste of a goatee. I'm going to say that right up front.
Yes, they teased it really hard last week.
I feel like the goatee usage in this episode is kind of indicative of like a larger problem with the show.
Sure. I agree. And I think it even goes outside the goatee in some way. I understand what you mean, that it's like emblematic of the entire thing, what's gone wrong. But I don't want to get off on too negative of a foot. Although I'll start it off just before we go to the break. I'll say the same thing as I thought last week. I enjoyed this on a lizard brain level. Like when I was watching it, I was just like, you know what? Shit's just happening endlessly here. I might as well just sort of, you know, pull the blanket up to my neck and enjoy the ride, I suppose, as we move along. But
did you find yourself emotionally devastated by the end of it?
Well, I guess we can talk about that too. Everyone's been, I noticed it a while ago that this would happen on Twitter. The official Discovery Channel, starting around 8 o'clock Eastern on Sundays when they start airing the episodes, endlessly retweets praise. And it's one of the big annoyances of Twitter to me is people who retweet praise. And sometimes it's not even a retweet. They'll respond to it, but they respond in a way where they retweet the original sentiment and then they respond on top of it so everyone on Twitter can see it, as opposed to just replying to the person so that not everyone can see it.
Right. Well, I, you know, as someone who needs to shamelessly self-promote from time to time, I don't have as much of a problem with that. I understand why people do it. You got to get the word out. You got to make your thing seem like everybody likes it.
But they're still, it's still just your, like, they're your followers, you know.
That's
like,
true. That's a good point.
That they know about everything that you're doing. That's my problem with it, is that, like, if you were broadcasting this to everybody on Twitter, I could totally understand retweeting praise, but it's only people who are probably aware of it at the time. So I don't really know. But the Discovery thing just does it to this. They're like, I don't trust anything on Twitter anymore because of all the sort of like bots, and like when you read the studies about like how sophisticated the response algorithms are, where people can just reply to things, and it's just like, I don't trust anything. So I don't know if this is really people believing this, but people basically shit their pants at the end of this episode when they were watching it.
I believe the official Star Trek Discovery Twitter account is what cost Hillary Clinton the election, right?
Yeah, I would have to assume. I mean, I only just stopped orgasming about an hour ago from watching this last night, so I'm glad that we'll be able to cover it. But it's something that drives me crazy, and I enjoy laughing at it with everyone else on Twitter. But let's get to The Wolf Inside, which is a good episode title, I think. It sounds like a good album title, too. But we will we'll take a break. We will listen to a little clip, and then we'll come back, and me and Clay are going to break down The Wolf Inside.
Michael Burnham in the flesh. And it's true. The Emperor will be pleased.
Not as pleased as I am to have reclaimed what's mine.
I'm sure. The Emperor has a mission. Your first dip back into the fray.
I'm more than up for the challenge.
Imperial intelligence has uncovered the location of the Fire Wolf.
The Klingon leader of the Resistance.
The one who's been marching these witless alien insurgents through their inevitable deaths. His base is located on Harlac. I'm sending you the coordinates now. Your mission is simple.
Terran General Order 4. Any exotic species deemed a threat to the Imperial supremacy will be extinguished without prejudice.
Kill them all. The Emperor commands it.
All right, Clay. So, I think we've moved a little bit closer to solving the mystery of whether Ash Tyler is Vok at the end of this episode. I think we're almost there, where it's almost been confirmed.
Wait. What?
So that might have been a joke that went over poorly. But I think that the
I get it.
The Vok thing. I don't even know if I want to start with the Vok thing. Like, where do you want to start about this? Because I do worry whether or not we repeat ourselves too often here. Because I think that the problems that the show has had continue to exist in the series, and it's not like they're going to be fixed at any point this time. So I do want to start off by saying that I enjoyed, ever since we took the mid-season break and we've been back in the Mirror Universe, I do think the show has benefited from having a consistent problem in the background that was not really there, because the Klingon War was not really a problem to them in the first half of the series. So the fact that they've basically dialed everything up to 11 and we have this constant omnipresent threat of the Mirror Universe has made the show more watchable on some level.
I like this episode more than I like the last one.
Okay.
Because, and I think it kind of is, on the one hand, because of what you're talking about, because last episode, my big criticism was that it took so long for you to actually get an idea of what the hell that was going on, like what the plot was. The plot didn't show up for like the first half of the episode. And in this episode, it's fairly straightforward. Like the one thing that bothered me right off the bat, though, was the big plot mechanic that they put in motion in the last episode, that they have to get this information about the Defiant. They do in between episodes. Like, you just come back and it's like, no, we got that shit. We can't read it, but we got it. It was strange to me that I guess it was just a part of the plot that was not as necessary as having a voiceover of Burnham talking about how awful it is being there, even though we have no idea how long she's been there.
Well, did that happen? Isn't the ending is when they get the Defiant?
No. They had it the whole time. From the start of the episode, they had it. They couldn't decipher it. They had it, though.
So what does she get at the very end?
She's just sending it. So when she goes down to the planet?
No, when she beams Tyler back and he takes a little disc out of his pocket.
That's it. She just sends it back to the Discovery. She had it the whole episode.
Oh, I see. You're right, because she's on the Shenzhou and she's unable to send that information over to them. Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. I understand what you mean. Yes. Sure.
Yeah, but it was, you know, the last episode, the whole driving momentum forward was we have to get this information about the Defiant.
Right. Gotcha. Yep.
And then this episode starts with, well, we have the information about the Defiant.
Well, it's a hell of a firewall.
We just can't.
It's a hell of a firewall.
Yeah. We just can't read it.
So they skip past the part where she reads it on Wikipedia and writes down everything about what the Defiant is. And the episode is basically about getting that information sent back to the Discovery. It is getting a little confusing. The ships are very similar looking to each other. So it's hard. You sometimes forget that Burnham is on a different ship.
And I also, you know, again, a longstanding, it seems to be a trope of the show at this point, is I have no idea where the hell Discovery is during any of this.
Right.
They just show up when it's convenient. Like at the end, when they blast Tyler into space, they just happen to be there and nobody seems to know that they're there.
Yep.
But I don't know where they are before that. They just seem to be chilling out among the wreckage of some other ships. I guess they haven't moved anywhere since the last episode.
Yeah.
But like, why doesn't anybody know that they, I don't know. Whatever.
And how do they know that they don't answer how they know that she's going to beam Tyler into space like that.
No, I assumed after it happened, I assumed she made a communication between scenes when we, you know, after they take Tyler out of there. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that. That was fine.
Okay.
But yeah, I liked it overall. I liked it more than the last episode. I think because there was something very clear that they had to do. In this case, it was to go down. You know, it seems like the only thing they can come up with for these people to do, though, is to, like, get flash drives. Because the last episode, they had to get a flash drive out of the broken ship, and then the driving momentum into this episode was they got to get a flash drive with the Defiant, I'm sorry, a floppy disk, with the Defiant information on it, which they get between episodes, and then this episode they have to get a flash drive of information about, I liked the, you know, it actually had plot momentum, that they had something they were trying to accomplish. You had the I think that the Vok Tyler reveal was probably drawn out too long. I like the stuff down on the planet where he was kind of freaking out and ends up attacking himself.
Yes.
That was kind of cool.
You mean drawn out in and of this episode or over the course of the series?
Yeah, in and of this episode. Okay. Like when they get to that final reveal, which still doesn't really make any sense to me. Like they keep giving you more pieces of the process of how they turned Vok into Tyler, and I feel like it just makes it more confusing.
Sure.
Because it's like, wait. At first, I thought they just put him through like a total body reconstructive surgery thing. But then there's a scene in the flashback where Vok and Tyler are both there. So are they implanting stuff into Tyler?
Oh, I thought that was a artistic cut of he's looking up at a mirror of himself.
I honestly don't know. I found it very confusing.
Okay, So there's two options, I suppose. We still don't know whether Ash Tyler is a real human or was a real human, right?
So I feel like he has to have been.
Yeah, because they faked information about him, at least. So if they captured him and they sort of did like a Frankenstein-y thing where they cut up pieces of him and put it onto Vok, maybe that's the answer there. I interpreted it as a artistic choice where they show you as Tyler, and then when he looks in the mirror, he sees himself as Vok for the first time.
Yeah, I think honestly it doesn't matter. Whatever. Right. But it's like the amount of time they spend teasing this thing. They give you more information, I'm not finding it to be any more clear what happened. I think they're doing themselves a disservice by showing us more of it.
I think it's just, it's such an obvious thing that I feel like just stretching it out this far has been a disservice. Like we talked about it last episode, but it shows Burnham to not be particularly intelligent about what's going on here. And it's just the way that they reveal it makes it seem like it should be a shocking revelation. And because of the internet and the way that it's just a very obvious thing in the first place that this, you know, one character disappears mysteriously and then a new character appears on the show and becomes a full-time cast person.
It is an interesting, I mean, I guess there's really two ways you can handle this thing, and they chose the one. There's the way they chose to do it, and then there's the other way, which is the audience knows that he's Vok pretty much from the get-go.
But the characters don't.
Yeah, and you have a mole situation on the ship or something like that. And it's just a creative choice they made, and you know, it's not the one that I find particularly satisfying, but
I think it's better in the age of the internet. I think that's a safer way to write things like that, to have the audience know what is going on the entire time and to put a little bit of tension on the, will the characters figure it out rather than will these, like the hive mind of the internet figure this out over the course of two episodes. That would be my argument against it. I think that the big problem to me with the Vok reveal and all this stuff is really just a problem that's been there since the start of the series, and it's really almost amplifying at this point. The pace of this show is absurd at this point. Like it is, the writers, it's almost like the writers are so hyped up they probably do lines of coke to like calm themselves down at this point, because it's like they're like, all right, we're gonna have the reveal. All right, we're gonna move on to this. All right, we're gonna find Rebel Alliance in the Mirror Universe. Fuck that, we're gonna kill them all. All right, fuck that, we're gonna do this. And it's like these things are, you're unable to settle into any of the characters. And to me, the reason that the Vok reveal scene was like a 7 out of 10 as opposed to higher is the fact that so much of it is riding on the fact that Tyler is basically betraying Burnham. And we don't have a sense of their relationship for me to care about that. Like, I don't feel conflicted for her when she has a phaser drawn on him. I'm like, just fucking kill this guy. Like, there's there's no reason for you not to ice him, because I don't believe that you are actually in a real relationship with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's a very strangely paced show.
It's just beat after beat. It's plot point after plot point. And like, just the fact that they like nuked the last of that rebel faction is like, what the hell? Like, why did that have to happen at this point? It's just so quick.
I kind of felt like, you know, after that happened, I kind of felt like a little bit the same way I felt about the new Star Wars movie, where it felt like they were going so out of their way to subvert things you were expecting to happen that they ended up just like standing still.
Sure.
You know, like you can make the option that is not the usual way to do stuff for you know certain plot points or characters or whatever. But if you keep doing that, then you're just not moving anything forward. You're just kind of like spinning in a circle creatively.
Yeah.
And yeah, like
I feel it hollows out any of the meaning behind it. Like it's a
Yeah.
I was just thinking we recorded Cardassians for DS9 before this one, and that'll go up after it though. But
also, never let Burnham ever do any sort of diplomatic communication with any species ever again.
Right. We recorded Cardassians, which is a kind of middling DS9 episode. But even in its middling, it's funny to compare. A lot more happens in this episode of Discovery, but there's less mm-hmm. to talk about in the episode yeah. of Discovery. Like, even a middling DS9 episode has a core to the story that you're like, oh, it's kind of that's kind of an interesting thing that they did there. Even though it's not a great episode, it's fun to discuss the sort of like what these characters are doing in that show. Mm-hmm. And Discovery, it is very difficult to talk about the characters because nothing is driving the characters in a realistic sense. They're just being propelled from point A to point B, and whatever it takes to get them there is all the show is interested in doing.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I've said this a million times. It's no cards on a board.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's just, you know, there's no time to let anything breathe. It's just point, 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 point. Even at the beginning, like, I was thinking about this as it started because, you know, they have this voiceover from Burnham talking about, like, every day that she spends in this universe, she feels like it's becoming more of her. And yeah, blah,
she's
blah,
already
blah,
been.
Blah.
She's only been there 2 days, but she's already falling apart. Like,
but
how
that's the
well
thing. We have no idea how long they've been there, and they undercut it. They undercut it by opening the show with this scene of some lady changing light bulbs in the engineering room and finding Stamets and the Doctor.
Yep.
And like, how long are we supposed to assume that these guys have been missing and nobody noticed?
Sure.
Like, if let's say, I mean, if it was let's say 10 hours, maybe, right? Like, I feel like if he's the head doctor, right? Someone should have noticed he's missing, and also someone should have noticed the incapacitated, crazy, comatose. Engineering guy who is in sick bay is also gone.
Who's the key to getting out of here?
Yeah, someone should have noticed that.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say that. Let's say they were gone for maybe 10 hours, and then they cut over to Burnham, who's like week 5 in the wasteland, and I just don't have any point of reference for how long things are taking to do or where people are and. That voiceover is like the voiceover that you need to write on your note card to get across certain stuff, but it's not actually grounded in anything.
I like that voiceover, except it's missing any of the context of voice. The show loves to tell us stuff as opposed to showing us things.
Yes.
And
it
kind of ties into
I thought it was going to be another episode full of just people talking about shit standing on a ship.
Right.
Because they have that voiceover, and then she has the scene with Saru, and then she does the scene with Saru over hologram, and they're just like talking about stuff, and I was like, fuck, is this just going to be another like let's talk about the mirror universe while we just kind of mill around for an hour?
Yeah.
Thankfully they did something, but
see,
the more I watch the show, the more it's becoming evident how small everything is, and that's just from like a production standpoint. It's really fascinating to me because they've got so much money put into all of these special effects and like exteriors of the ships and all this kind of other stuff, but it's like they don't have money to do anything else.
Yeah,
you know, they don't have money to build any sets or do anything. And I don't know if am I missing that this is how it's always been. Like I know Deep Space Nine is kind of an outlier because the whole point is that they're on this ship.
Sure.
But like I feel like this never came across to me watching like TNG.
Well, it feels. Even with Deep Space Nine, where they're on the same space, I feel like you're getting an outside influence onto you. Like you're, people have to come to the station, but they bring their own baggage. Discovery is funny because maybe it fits thematically, because we always talked in TOS about how isolated the ship felt at that point, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. in TOS they were still exploring new places. Yeah. Discovery is all about sitting in the dark waiting for something to happen to you.
Yeah.
And yeah. it's not very satisfying. You don't get any sense of the universe or any sense of where the ship is going or anything that's going on like that.
In all the other series, at least the ones that I've watched so far, the ship or the station is a character. Like, there are identifiable
locations,
areas.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure I've said this before, I can't remember, but this show doesn't have that. Like, I don't have any feeling whatsoever of the Discovery as a ship.
No. Or the Shenzhou, which we're yeah. spending an equal amount of time on at this point.
And it just doesn't have that host feeling that the other shows do. And, you know, does it necessarily have to? No. But the stuff around it, I mean, the reason that it works so well in the other shows is that it's like it's this anchor for the stuff that's happening inside it.
Yeah.
And I don't get that from the show. And I'm trying not to compare it directly to the other shows and be like, well, it's not like the other Star Trek shows. Or, you know, I'm just thinking like from a dramatic standpoint. It's like yes. the set that they are on, on which they are conducting their drama, is like kind of meaningless and not in a good way. It's not like yep. a black box theater kind of way, you know?
Yes. And I think that something like the series seems to be split amongst people, and a lot of the criticism that we're getting for how we're choosing to talk about the show is that I've noticed one thing that sort of runs between along people who like the show to a very high degree is mm-hmm. that they're putting a lot of expectation on future development. And I think that the show will obviously get better as seasons go along. Shows tend to. It's the rare yeah. case where the shows don't get better. But I think that it's a lot of, the mirror universe is ripe for philosophical exploitation, and like there's tons of stuff you can talk about. I would argue this show is not at all interested in talking about that, because
yeah.
the Burnham opening scene should have been what this episode is about. Instead, it's just a log where, because yes, the idea that moving into the mirror universe, would this affect a normal person? Like, how long can you see all this horrible stuff that's going on before you start to be personally affected by it? It doesn't really go anywhere, because Burnham always makes the right choice. And Saru at the very end says, we're still Starfleet, even though we're in this fucked up hellscape. And we're going to act accordingly. So if you want to set up the mirror universe as this thing that sort of tests the mettle of Starfleet, this show doesn't seem to want to be interested in doing that. It's more about the narrative drive that's going on inside of it than opposed to any sort of exploration. And ironically, Tyler is the person who gets exposed by being in the mirror universe. And that he's the most obvious choice that would be exposed. He has the literal bad guy inside of him.
Right.
And none of the other characters do.
Yeah. I noticed this episode and the last episode, I had this weird feeling where as they began, they would give you the previously on Discovery thing. Okay, so in professional wrestling, right, they have storylines that they do that end up running for like fucking months, because they're building to whatever a big, you know, let's say WrestleMania, right? You've got these two people that they put against each other. And they do basically 85% bullshit for like 3 months, where they just end up fighting each other to disqualification, or like yapping at each other and interacting. And it's not, most of it is not good, right?
Sure.
But when it comes to time for WrestleMania, there is always, without fail, like a 3-minute video package that is fucking great.
Yep.
Like, they go in and they take the best stuff and all of the stuff, the key moments and just the best images from all of that garbage that they did for the last 3 months, and give it to you in a very condensed primer for what's about to happen. I feel like every episode of Discovery is the same way as this. So like when they give me the previously on Discovery thing, it makes me feel like, oh, all of the stuff they've done is just so they can cut it together and give you a primer for what's happening in this episode. And then I keep waiting for the episode to pay off that stuff, and then that episode just becomes the next piece of that previously on Discovery thing.
Right.
I don't. Does that make sense?
It does. Just,
it's a weird. It's a weird kind of thing that I find that's happening. I felt
relieved by the Vok reveal, which I thought was unique in this episode. It might have been more of a sense of like, thank God, we finally can move this storyline along somewhere. Like, ironically, for how fast the show moves, that one took forever for them to resolve it. But
I'll be honest with you. Judging by the way they handle plot threads and how cavalierly they toss them aside. When she energized him into space, I 100% figured he was dead. I was like, oh, okay, this is just another thing. They're going to like, hey, it was this, and now we're done with this. Moving on. I thought it was going to be like a tardigrade thing where it's like, well, he's fucking dead now, so I guess we're moving on to something else.
I thought that she was going to beam him somewhere else on the ship and take him back to Discovery, which they kind of do, but I was surprised that they showed him at least. I thought that was going to be a teaser for like an episode break. We're going to get that in the next episode.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be... I thought they were going to do it like they did with the Admiral, where it's like, I don't know what happened.
Right.
What do you think happened?
Yeah. But tune in next time to see what happened.
And when they showed him actually like freezing to death, I was like, oh, that doesn't actually feel out of character. And then when they beamed him off, I was surprised because that felt out of character.
Yeah, right. I like the
cliche,
I like
the cliche way to handle it. Was the one that felt out of place.
I like the use of the transporter as an execution device in the Mirror Universe. I think that works well.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I kind of like the Mirror Universe, at least the way that they're doing it here. I don't really have a lot of issues with the universe itself. It's lit differently. Space looks different. Is it, though?
It doesn't feel like it's lit that much differently. It feels like it's just like the same lights are out.
It feels like the sun is lower or something. You get more dramatic lighting in the Mirror Universe. But I guess we should talk about the big thing of this episode is that she meets a alliance of Mirror Universe races that are basically the Federation of this universe, as opposed to the humans being involved. I both like and dislike the way that this is done, because what is Burnham trying to get out of this? Why does she need to go down there to figure this out? Because she gives us the idea, she's like, you know, there's a alliance of races down there fighting off. Maybe if we go down, we can learn something about how to work together. The Federation has been existing for like 100 years. What the hell are they talking about? Like, it exists in their prime universe.
She specifically wanted to know how to get the Klingons to side with them.
But
she wanted to know, learn how to...
They're the Mirror Universe Klingons. They're not the
real
Klingons.
Right, it's inherently flawed.
Yeah, you're not going to learn anything about them. They're going to be...
Also, like, the concept I thought was pretty... was fine. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, as far as something for her to do... information that would be beneficial to bring back, sure. Go down, talk to a nice Klingon, and have the Klingon tell you how you get them to play nice. But then when they get down there, it's like the information that she gets is, well, you know,
Klingons all like of us, to have their honor and stuff.
Well, no, but before that, it's like, she's like, how do you get all of these species to work together? And Vok is just like, well, you know, the humans hate all of us, and, well, we don't like the humans, so we just kind of work together. Right. And then she's like, what? And he goes, yeah, you know, I mean, once all the houses of my family were put together, it was, you know, much easier to do it. But it's really just that we have a common enemy.
That has to be the resolution, right? When they go back to the Prime Universe, uniting the houses to reset the Prime timeline will be the thing that brings about peace, right?
Yeah. I will say... this episode really made me miss Takumva.
I love Takumva. It was a huge mistake to get rid of him. He has the personality that Vok does not have. I know people like to shit on the Klingon stuff, and I agree that they talk way too slow. I think that the Klingon dialogue is actually very good, though. The things that they talk about, I think Takumva's lines about, like, we are trying to stay pure as opposed to the filthy humans, Andorites, Vulcans, and Tellarites who all mix together.
Yeah. Like when they brought that stuff up, I was like, oh shit, what happened to that stuff?
Right. Yeah.
Like that character saying that stuff was like, man, at least you know, to quote the Big Lebowski, at least he has an ethos.
Yes, you're right. That character believes in something. And so, well, to get back to the mirror universe, they go down, and the show is playing this as if Vok is telling Burnham something very interesting, because all of her reaction shots were the director saying, like, act as if he's, like, giving you a revelation about something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know what she's going to learn about this. We learn that the mirror universe is kind of odd because it's not the TOS mirror universe in the sense that it's not a perfect opposite, because Sarek is not any different from Sarek in the Prime universe.
No. Goatees always mean evil. You can't put a goatee right. on Sarek and have him be good Sarek, but just with a goatee. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of the imagery and symbolism of the show.
Right. And the Sarek thing, I don't know. What was your whole... I felt like that was just a waste of Sarek, and it was only to sort of get that character in there again. It should have been any other Vulcan. And the fact that it's Sarek also makes me question why he doesn't know everything about his relationship with Burnham in the Prime universe.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to get a hint of that.
I can only assume that he's going to play into stuff coming later.
Right.
Because if it was any, as a device to get them to trust Burnham, I liked it. I thought it made a lot of sense. I thought it was a good way to get that across in a way that was believable. To the mirror universe guys, but you could have done that with any Vulcan. I know that they have, you know, maybe he wouldn't have been able to get all that info from anyone that he didn't have like a previously existing mind link or something. But it's,
yep.
I don't know how mind links transfer over universes. But I can only imagine that, you know, he's not dead from blowing up the Rebels or whatever, or the Rebels ended up getting out of there.
Yeah, they say they got most of them off. I think they just got the last pickings of them. But
so I'm sure he's going to factor in somehow. And you know,
on a positive issue, I do like the makeup of the Andorians and Tellarites. I think they look they look very good.
I do also have to once again say I fucking hate. I wish they would not use the word prophet. I hate it. It's so hacky. And I understand that he's literally a prophet, but come on, come up with some other fucking word. It's just. It's just, I don't know. When people start, like, waxing poetic about prophets, it just makes my eyes roll into the back of my head.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not actually an alien, the prophet alien from DS9 or anything like that. He's just a mind reader. He can't really see the future either, so he's not really a prophet in the strictest sense of the word. He can just kind of tell what's going on. And, yeah, I didn't really... You know, I liked that scene. I appreciate the fact that they did a sort of clever flip of the Federation in the mirror universe there. Maybe it's not super clever, but it's interesting at least that this is the way that this sort of alliance is shaken out on that side. It's just, it didn't end up meaning too much by the end of it, where the Emperor comes along and says, hey, it's Georgiou. Well, we get some things right. And she shoots the hell out of him. And makes her appearance here. So let's talk about the end, because Georgiou will reappear, obviously, going forward. I still remain sort of dumbfuddled that this actress is considered a get for the show. I don't think she's particularly good at this. I don't think that this is the right role for her. She reminds me strongly of Mortal Kombat for some reason. All this talk about the Emperor. And what is going on with Lorca at the very end of this episode?
In what sense?
Did you know there's a shot at the very end where the Emperor appears and we get shots of like Burnham reacting and terrified. They show Lorca and he kind of smirks to himself and looks down at the ground sort of smiling to himself.
I don't know.
You don't know?
He's probably from the mirror universe. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, if it is from the mirror universe, I'll be interested to see how they resolve that. It's the only way that I can make sense of it, unless he has some other plan to go in and blow up the Emperor of the mirror universe for whatever that would accomplish. But I don't know. How'd you feel about the ending?
It's fine. Yeah, I get... It's all right. I don't know. I think it worked in the overall sense of the show.
Yep.
you know, I found it to be, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens next. And having Zhuo Zhao be the emperor is, you know, makes the most sense and puts Burnham in a emotional quandary, yep. So to speak.
Sort of.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I believe the emotional distress she's in involving Zhuo Zhao way more than I do the emotional stress she was in involving Tyler.
Yes.
You know, like, I got a better sense of the importance and relationship of Zhuo Zhao and Burnham than I ever really did with Tyler and Burnham.
Although,
Tyler and Burnham, it's just like a romantic relationship.
I will say that at least that Tyler that came in is the Tyler she knew in the Prime Universe, and this Zhuo Zhao is not the person you knew. Like, once you get past the shock of seeing them again, you mm-hmm. can kind of rationalize this is not really the same person, where Tyler was the same person who came over with her.
Yeah, that's true.
I agree that it's not a great reveal on Tyler's part, and the Zhuo Zhao thing feels like it should be more important, but I think they're in tricky territory trying to make this tie in to somehow be a like a comeuppance for Burnham on some level. Mm-hmm. I'll have a very hard time buying into that if that's what they try to do, because it's not really her.
Yeah, and like, I don't know if they're supposed to be this is like the end point of her redemption arc kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't really know what she does short of like convincing the emperor to be nice.
Yeah.
that would be like that would be the satisfying conclusion of her redemption. Like,
well, how does she even redeem herself, right? Like,
I don't
she
know.
Has to
it's tough because they moved so fast with all these plot lines that they kind of shuffled a lot of the Zhuo Zhao stuff under the rug.
Yes.
After like three episodes.
You kind of even forget that the Burnham thing is that she mutinied on some level. Like, that she's
right.
That
right.
You know, the mutiny was for good cause on some sense. So I don't really understand if they are going for a redemption arc, which we can't really confirm yet, that she doesn't seem to have much to redeem herself against.
I guess maybe redemption isn't the right word. Maybe it's more like closure.
Sure.
But even so, it's like, I don't know, like, how does she get closure involving this other than like by killing her? And does that allow her to move forward? I'm not sure what the emotional character endpoint is.
Yes,
but
yeah,
you know, who knows.
I agree. I think the only thing I'll go out on a positive note, just saying that the for all the railing against the character development I've done, I do think Tilly actually has a pretty good arc going so far.
Yeah, Tilly's good. I like her. She was good in this episode.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't even talk about the Stamets stuff with the fungus and whatnot.
He's in the Spore Forest, and he's met his Mirror Universe counterpart, who's also in the Spore Forest for summer.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see why that is.
Yes, but, and how they're going to work together.
Yeah, and I like the thing Tilly was saying about fungus being the only organism that has like a direct link between life and death,
yeah.
or something like that. Whatever. Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting. That's like a scientific philosophy thought that I'd never.
What'd you think really of the science between those two in these scenes? Did you think it felt Star Trek-y, or did you think it felt a little forced?
I feel it was fairly Star Trek-y.
Yeah.
Like there was, she was. I was a little bit curious as to how she went from. Asking comatose Stamets questions about like setting the thermostat because she always forgets to do it.
Yeah.
Into this episode where she has like a master's degree in theoretical fungi physics.
Yeah.
But you know, whatever.
I have qualms about, you know, when she comes up with the solution, she says to Saru, "Can I now take part of that command test or whatever?"
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that solving the science problem really qualifies you for a command on some level. I don't think that's a tie-in to one. One does not necessarily lead to the other. But I do agree that I like her arc here, where it's obviously she clearly starts off as the cadet, and this whole experience has given her more of a seasoned outlook on things. She's much less annoying in the Mirror Universe, which is nice. The actress is good. The actress reminds me of Adele every single time she pops on screen. And she's handled herself pretty well, I think. And I guess Saru is actually running the ship, which makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, I hope before this is over, I mean, I don't think we're going to, but I would like to I would like them to touch base in the Prime universe with Mirror Discovery.
Yes.
And see what the hell's going on with them.
Because we're assuming that ship is now in the Prime universe at some point. So that's
they do. I think they explicitly say it in the last episode. They just switch places.
I think in this episode they wonder about what kind of havoc it might be causing in the that universe. So they have to go over and fix it. Yeah, but the Defiant will be the key. That'll make a lot of sense.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you think they're gonna actually run into the Defiant? Or is the Defiant not there anymore? Is that the point, that the Defiant's not there?
I can't remember if the Defiant is destroyed in the Enterprise episodes. I don't remember. If the Defiant still exists, I don't think they will in this.
Yeah,
I don't think in the Enterprise episode, they do have the old model flying next to the new Enterprise in that.
Yeah, I saw a clip of that. That was cool.
Yeah. I don't think they'll do that.
I find myself like, I hate, you know, you're in a weird position with these long-standing franchises, and I think the new Star Wars was kind of in the same boat, where it's like you want things to move forward, you want things to be new, but you also have like a deep, like subconscious need to see the things you like.
Yep.
And in Star Wars, there was something that really bothered me on a subliminal level that I couldn't put my finger on what it was, but I left the movie like really not, something just felt wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized later that as I've talked about extensively on the Star Wars podcast, I think that a lightsaber fight that has emotional and thematic weight behind it is pretty much the best thing you can do in a movie. It's just visually amazing, and it's just operatic, and it's, you know, it's just, it's very, very satisfying. And every Star Wars movie, for the most part, except for Rogue One, regardless of quality, there is at least a lightsaber fight in it where two people draw swords for, reasons that are kind of weak through reasons that are incredibly strong. And at least it's there, and at least it's something to look forward to. And in the new movie, at no point in this film do two lightsabers touch each other at all. And it really bothered me.
Yeah.
I mean, when I saw it again, they lightsabers touch for about half a second in a flashback.
Yep.
But like there was no – that's just like one of those things that I expect to see. And the fact that it wasn't there kind of irked me. And this is a long way around of me saying like, in this show is so frustrating for me on a certain level that I feel like it would be a really cathartic release if they were to come across this Constitution class ship with iconography that was recognizable.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I understand that that's not something for everybody, and I am a fan of moving forward past nostalgia as much as the next person, but this show in particular has been frustrating to me on a level that's kind of difficult to explain.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it. I think it's so different that it's irking me a little bit. And also, we've talked about it plenty of times, technology, more advanced, whatever, that's fine. I still do not understand the hologram communication things. Why would you be walking around on your end?
Yeah.
Like, what if you're in a small room?
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where Burnham is talking to the other captain from the other ship, and he walks, like, up onto her drum riser where her seat is. And it's like, where is he going in his room where he can step up onto a... I don't know. It's just one of those things where
he's
it's like,
into the wrong camera, and he's like, oh, shit, I'm over here. I got to walk towards this camera or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, like, it's one of those things where, it looks cool, but and it's whatever. But it's like the physics of it just don't jive with me.
I've been thinking that the Enterprise thing, the Enterprise episode makes it clear that the moving between the universe can shift your time with you.
Yeah.
Because that episode sends the ship back in time and to the Mirror Universe. There is a chance that getting out of here is... What do you think the odds are that getting out of here does not send the ship back to immediately when they began? I think it's pretty strong. I'd bet probably towards that they would jump to another time and see what happens.
Yeah, that would be honestly, I would be all for that, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
If they use that as the way to kind of do the original plan for the show, where they have the it was originally going to be the anthology over at different points in time in Starfleet history.
A much better idea.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it would be more expensive. I think that's probably the biggest drawback is that it would have just been too expensive. But if they kind of half-ass it a little bit and use this as an excuse to be able to do that, I would be all for that, I think.
Because they also have to do a little bit of crew refreshment in between seasons, right? I would imagine, because the cast is pretty small at this point.
Yeah.
And if anyone else dies, like, if Tyler might somehow continue on as a half Klingon, half human person.
Oh, I hope they kill him.
Yeah, so I mean, Tyler.
I hope they kill him.
Tyler's likely gone, I would have to assume. But that's about it. Well, there's a good discussion, I think. We'll play an audio clip. We'll come back and say goodbye.
We needed to infiltrate your ship. Learn your secrets. You were willing to betray your captain to protect your people. I sacrificed my body and mind to protect mine. I have the human's face, but inside I remain Klingon.
Klingon?
I remain Vork, son of none, the torchbearer.
No. You're Ash Tyler. We're gonna get back to Discovery and sit with Dr. Culber.
Dr. Culber saw past this feeble body into the heart and mind of a warrior. Which is why I killed him.
What?
All right, Clay, so I think my final thoughts are I think I'm settling more into the brain set, the mindset that I need to be while I'm watching the episodes. I don't think the show has changed all that dramatically, although it does have more of a drive to it at this point. And I'm looking forward to how this is now resolving. Now, the fact that they're starting to solve some of the mysteries that they're putting out there,
yeah,
I do get a sense of relief watching it, and I'm not just like, hey, we'll just spin our wheels for another week or something until this happens. The farther we go into the Mirror Universe, the more I wonder why we wasted 9 episodes getting to the Mirror Universe on some level.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. I liked this episode. I don't know if it was my favorite of the season. I think I still like the Cause and Effect ripoff episode. But I like this one. I thought it was a good step forward for the show. If the show is not going to fix itself, maybe continuing like this isn't terrible, but hopefully they settle down and get a little bit of more emotional depth to some of these characters.
Yeah, I actually thought this was more or less one of the best episodes, if not the best episode. I think the Cause and Effect episode is a little bit cheating because, you know, it's basically playing a cover song of a song that you really like. So, but as far as episodes that stand on their own, I thought this one was really solid. It's, you know, we have our nitpicks about it, which are unfortunately not immune to everything that's brought us to this point. But just as far as an episode of this show goes, I thought it was good. I thought it was, you know, move stuff. It moved things forward. It moved the plot forward. It didn't feel, you know, they're still rushing, but it didn't feel like they were just jettisoning things left and right to hit their midway point so they could get to the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
It's like they actually are paying some stuff off and moving things forward. And so I found that satisfying.
Know what I think will be very much in the show's temperament and will drive me crazy if it actually happens?
What's that?
At the end of this, right, Tyler gets sent to the brig. Mm-hmm. If Tyler and Laurel are able to communicate with each other,
yes. I was thinking the same thing.
I will smash my TV screen and be like, this is so stupid.
I was thinking the same fucking thing.
Yep.
If they are even in the same room,
right.
I will be very angry.
Right, yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see. But anyway, guys, thank you very much for watching and listening to the show. Hope you appreciate, or we appreciate you listening, I guess, would be the way to say that. But we'll be back with the episode after this, which I don't know off the top of my head, but we have Cardassians coming up on Thursday. Real Ripe and Real Rotten episode is going to go up. It's a good year. I will be talking about that on Wednesday. Other than that, I think we have 4 episodes left of Discovery. I might be wrong. I think it's around 4. Yeah, so I will do that quickly. So you think it's likely that what do you think? Is it likely that the show will jump to a new timeline when it comes back? Or do you think that the show will escape the mirror universe in this season?
I hope so. Because I don't know how much more you can really do in it, at least the way that they're setting it up.
Do you think any more characters are going to die?
I would say, see, the usual kind of cliche thing I would say is that, the cliche answer is I think Tyler dies, but I think Tyler dies by sacrificing himself.
Sure.
You know, one of those like, you know, he's conflicted human, conflicted Klingon thing, but he's like learned to, but they haven't had time to build that up at all. Like if they had him aware of his true identity for the past like 6 episodes, I would believe that. But if they did that now, I don't think they would earn it.
I liked the when Burnham and Ash, he's revealing that he's Vok, and she's talking to him, and he's like, "I am Vok. I worship Kalas." And she goes, "No, you are Ash Tyler." I said, "He absolutely is not Ash Tyler. There is no two ways about this. He is clearly Vok, and you should go with it." But I think that kind of falls into the that's the kind of problem with it. Like, yeah. It's a, you know, you're just not, you don't have the grounding for that kind of a thing. Last quick question for you.
Yep.
Do you think that moving back, if they move in back into the Prime universe, will it be the universe that they left? Not just time, but will anything have changed in the universe that they return to?
Well, I don't see why it would if they go back to the same time, because nothing they're doing in the mirror universe is going to affect the Prime universe, right? So it's not like a Back to the Future scenario where they,
right,
you know, Biff got the book and changed history. It's, yep. It's, I mean, if they go, honestly, and this is just like a dart, just throwing it with my eyes closed, I would say there is a possibility that they end up coming out of the mirror universe back to the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, potentially.
And something that they do there.
She learns how to deal with the Klingons in the mirror universe.
Yeah. Honestly, yes. Something like that. I think that's a possibility, but if they do that, again, I don't know if that's just me being like, well, this is so different from Star Trek. Something has to happen to make it similar to Star Trek. Because like, I don't want to come across as like that being my problem with the show, because it's easy to criticize someone if that's the problem with the show, and it's a deeper seated issue than that.
Yeah.
At the same time, so much of the conflict of what's happening this season revolves around her actions at that battle, the death of Georgiou, her relationship with Georgiou,
start of the war.
Yeah. Like, it, I wouldn't put it past them to do that. But if they do that, I don't know where the show goes from there.
Yeah,
because that's like, you can't, like, what do you do? I mean, you get a whole host of other problems you got to deal with at that point.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that point would be difficult to. I was laughing just when they have the Mirror Universe conference with the new Federation in this universe. Mm-hmm. The problem with selling it, and something that I appreciate the TOS episode Mirror Mirror for, is that when the characters moved into that universe, they were unable to convince people of things. Like, the if you think about it, it would be as if the mirror universe in our like real life, like your mirror copy came over and he was like hyper violent and everything. Mm-hmm. It would be like you would be able to come around to his sort of perspective on things. And
right,
I don't believe that these mirror universe people should be so easily convinced about things, because they're talking to someone who is so totally not what they would expect out of things.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a problem, but it's just something I noticed.
I was also thinking after they take Tyler away to execute him or whatever, I was expecting there to be more of like a crew response, as though like Burnham is now like vulnerable. You know, like
yes, this, they shouldn't respect her weakness, I don't think.
Yeah, like the way the Klingons do it, you know. Like she should walk up to that redhead and just like break her nose or something to reassert her dominance.
They haven't done a lot of in the Mirror Mirror episode. There was a lot of like crewmen would protect you to curry favor with you. They haven't really done that in this new series. Things seem more official than they did in TOS, where it was a lot of like I'll scratch your back, a lot of like Game of Thrones political maneuvering among the crew members. They haven't really done that here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they haven't had time to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's. It's really fascinating how this show moves so fast but gets so little done.
Yep. I think that's a good way to go out. Hopefully the podcast is not that way, but we will wrap it up there. I think that's it. We announced that everything will be coming up. You can follow us. All the social media will be in the links. Patreon.com/ThePenskeyFile if you want to support the show. $2 a month. You get extra stuff. It's well appreciated as well. And that's about it. Anyway, Clay, we'll be back next week with more Discovery. And in the meantime, you can check out our DS9 Cardassians episode, which will be up on Thursday. Guys, thank you very much. Go ahead, Clay.
I was just going to say, in January 31st, my book Redline comes out. If you happen to be at a comic book store, feel free to drop in and grab one. That'd be much obliged.
Sure. I'll put a link to something in the video description for this. I'll write that down now. And guys, thank you very much. Have a good day. We will see you next time.